Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Tech Doctor Podcast. I'm Allison Hartley, and with me, as always, is the wonderful Dr. Robert Carter. How are you, Robert?
I'm good, Allison. Nice to be with you again as well.
Well, I always have so much fun doing these podcasts, and I said before that this was an exciting edition of the Tech Doctor podcast, but actually, it's a downright festive edition of the Tech Doctor podcast. I mean, I'm feeling like it's Christmas on Cinco de Mayo over here. I don't know about you.
Absolutely, because I know what you're getting ready to talk about.
I know you do. Today, we are going to talk about something that probably I would say most of the blind community who are in any way involved in technology kind of already knows about. But I'm going to give a little bit of background information. Of course, today we're going to talk about the wonderful accessibility, which has been finally incorporated wonderfully into the Kindle app for iOS.
Yeah,
I know, I'm so
it
excited. I really do feel like a kid on Christmas. I'm not even lying to you. So, anyone who has kind of followed the Kindle accessibility journey, if you will remember that for a number of years, we were very limited as people who were blind or visually impaired to how we could access, and in many ways, if we could access Kindle books. When the Kindle first came out, we were kind of out of luck entirely. We could not access any portion of Kindle books, there was no text-to-speech. There was text-to-speech reading on some of them, but there had not been a device that would have allowed us to access that. Then in 2010, that changed a little bit when the Kindle 3, later called the Kindle Keyboard, came out, with what I always considered kind of half-baked accessibility, although I was grateful for it, because that accessibility at least allowed a Kindle user to turn on the device and access their library and some very basic settings.
Yeah, it felt pretty bolted on, though.
It really kind of did. It really kind of did. And I used it for a while, and you did too,
Yep.
because it was all we had. Then there was the Kindle for PC software, which opened up access a little bit and closed it in other ways because it allowed us to access books solely on the PC, so you were tethered to your PC.
Again, though, it was limited access.
Extremely. I mean, you could access books regardless of whether or not they had text-to-speech enabled, which was really kind of the only broadening opening factor in all of this. But you could not navigate meaningfully through a book. You basically had to continuously read, and this was the problem on the Kindle keyboard as well. You could basically navigate via page, and that was pretty much it. So, in terms of any kind of meaningful access to these books for a student, it just really wasn't there.
I was just thinking that in my experience, the Kindle keyboard and the PC version were really basically only useful for reading novels.
I agree. I agree. You couldn't have really accessed any kind of reference material, and certainly not any kind of textbook that would require you to go back and refer to certain passages or formulas or what have you.
And that has been one of the issues is that Amazon has worked hard to try to get the Kindle into the school system, and up until now, blind students have not had access really to the textbooks.
Right, they've been completely left out, unfortunately.
So that's a serious issue, and we'll talk in a minute about to what extent we think this iOS app has helped with that problem. But the Kindle access, has been such a roller coaster because we thought we were kind of getting somewhere with the Kindle keyboard and the Kindle PC, but again, there were still huge holes in it because there was no access, and as far as I know, still isn't for Kindle books on the Mac. And as far as I know, it really wasn't incorporated at all or very little in the newer Kindle devices like the Kindle Fire or the Kindle Paper White.
Right, not at all. I believe the Kindle Paper White either has implemented or is implementing some very, very rudimentary accessibility, which is basically just a version of TalkBack, because of course it's an Android fork that is used to power the newer Kindle devices. But I have not seen it, I have not played with it, and I can't really speak to it very, very well.
It certainly is nothing like what we saw on May 1st.
That's right, that's right. So to give a little, just a tiny bit more background, the Kindle app for iOS has been out for quite some time. And until very, very recently, we could look at the books in our library. We could access some settings in the Kindle app with VoiceOver. There was just one problem, wasn't there, Robert?
Yes, there was.
We couldn't read the books.
Exactly.
This was kind of a big deal, as it is a book reading app. Like many of you, I kept the Kindle app around on my iPhone, just hoping that with this update or that update, accessibility features might be implemented, which would allow me to access on my iPhone the over 1.8 million ebooks which Kindle offers.
You were more optimistic than I. I never had the app on my iPhone until Wednesday.
I never lost hope. Hope sprung eternal.
Well, it paid off for you.
Although it was waning.
Yes.
Yes, it did pay off, because on April 30th, I went to bed and the Kindle app was not accessible.
And you were depressed.
I was. I was very sad. And on May 1st, I woke up. I noticed there was an update to the Kindle app. I thought, okay. And I have to admit, I just kind of installed it. I didn't really even bother at that point looking at the What's New features, because I thought, oh, they're not going to fix accessibility now at this point. It's really, my hope was not springing as eternally as it once did.
Yeah.
So I just kind of half-heartedly installed this update and went on with my morning. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm not really that much of a morning person, so I was drinking my coffee, checking my tweets, trying to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Kindle accessibility is now implemented on the iOS devices. And I stopped. And the first thing I did, honestly, was I looked at the calendar. And I verified that it was, in fact, May 1st. Because I thought for one sleepy moment that this was somebody's idea of a very, very cruel April Fool's Day joke.
Or a May Fool's in this case.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I, in my half-awake state, I thought, wait a second, is it April or is it May? Man.
Yeah.
And then I kept seeing reactions to this. And so I'm like, well, heck, I need to check this out. So I opened up the Kindle app, and immediately I just saw little changes before I even tried to access a book to the UI, which just made the sorting of books a little more intuitive. And I noticed that when I came to a book in the cloud, I heard it say double tap to download, and I thought, oh, I don't really remember this before. So I double tapped on Conversations with Tom Petty, which is a book that I had actually been reading on my Kindle keyboard. And yeah, I started getting this wonderful download progress, and then it said download finished. And I double tapped on it, and I was taken to this glorious screen, which in a nutshell said, menu off, flick down with two fingers to begin reading. And I thought, wait a minute, this can't be real, I have to be dreaming. But I flicked down with two fingers, and I started reading the same book that I had been reading on my clunky, half-baked Kindle keyboard on my beautiful, pocket-sized iPhone 5.
Yeah, that is so exciting.
I was flabbergasted, and I actually tweeted. I said, OMG, I'm reading a Kindle book on my iPhone. I knew this day would come.
Yeah, I saw that tweet, and I knew you were going to be really excited because, like me, you're a huge fan of books, and to have all these books and magazines now available, and it's even better than we had hoped in some ways, or that because it turns out that, like the PC version, all the books are available, and it's not limited to just those which have text-to-speech enabled.
Right, that's so exciting. It's absolutely fantastic.
What Amazon really did, at least as I see it, is they followed Apple's guidelines and implemented VoiceOver in their app the way that Apple intends people to do it, which enables you to have good access to the information that's in the app.
Well, they followed Apple's guidelines to a T, and in many ways I really feel that they exceeded them, because when you open a book, you have this lovely screen that just has the text of the book that you're reading, and all you have to do to access a menu with a whole host of options is just double tap anywhere on the screen. And I haven't really seen that kind of layered access anywhere else. So in a lot of ways, at least for me, perhaps it does exist in other apps, but for me, it's kind of revolutionary.
Yeah, you're right. And it works well to switch between the menu and the book. There's an option in the menu that says return to book, and it takes you right back to where you left off. So
yeah, right in the middle of the screen too, which is cool.
Yeah, so it's very, I think, well thought out. And, you know, one of the major differences that I see is we really have moved from Kindle accessibility feeling very bolted on, afterthought, token approach, to something that feels like it's really fully integrated at this point.
Yeah, it's very fluid.
It is very fluid. So I'm curious, though, if you opened the book that you'd been reading on your Kindle keyboard, did the iOS app offer to sync your position for you?
It did not, and I have a couple of ideas of why that might be. Number one, I did not hit the sync button right away. So I think that that might have had something to do with it. Number two, the battery on my Kindle keyboard had actually died. So I don't know if it was able to go and see exactly where I was, but it wasn't even a big deal because I was able to go by percentage and then just go back a few pages. And I would say within 25 seconds, I was back where I wanted to be in my book. So I didn't even really care. And thus far, every time I've gone back to the book, it's always remembered my place from here on out. So I've been doing a lot of switching back and forth between books, as you can imagine now. But it's always remembered my place from here on out. So that little 25 seconds of what some might call inconvenience was just no big deal for me.
Okay, because I haven't actually tested this, but theoretically, Amazon's Whisper Sync service, they call it, should cause your books to stay in sync across your various devices.
It should, and quite frankly, I just don't know why it didn't for me. But like I said, it was the work of 25 seconds, so yeah. I wasn't really upset about it or anything.
Well, I wish I'd thought to test it before we started the podcast, but I'm sure we'll be hearing more in the weeks to come about how all these more sophisticated features do or don't work with the app, but I can theoretically see no reason why Whisper Sync wouldn't work.
Right. In theory, it should work pretty flawlessly.
Okay, so you got this app on Wednesday, and you were obviously very excited, and you were able to start reading your book right away, and you've been pretty happy with the interface. And now it's Sunday, so you've had a few days to sort of live with the app, and I don't know if the honeymoon has worn off or not, but how are you feeling about it a few days later?
Well, for me, the honeymoon is still in full swing.
Okay.
which concerns Jeremy a bit. But
yeah. I understand.
But I have bought a couple of books, and I actually subscribed to Macworld magazine for only $1.99 a month, which is amazingly inexpensive. And I actually started reading that last night, which is why I'm a little tired this morning.
Okay.
I was up late delving into Macworld. And I was so impressed, especially with the magazines, that the table of contents is extremely accessible. You have the option of an image or text view, and I'm happy to say that I would assume because VoiceOver is on, it does default to the text view of the magazine. It's just a joy to read a magazine on the Kindle app. And I, like I said, I've just been kind of flitting back and forth between various books and my magazine and just having a grand old time.
Well, at the risk of putting you on the spot, I haven't actually looked at a magazine. Could you show us a little bit about how you go about reading Macworld?
I would be delighted. Okay.
All right.
Here we go.
Catch her while she's excited, man. She'll show you.
Kindle, all items, button.
Okay.
Pay for more options.
Now, what I am going to do, and I love how they've implemented voiceover hints, by the way, in this app, too.
Macworld, 01/06/2013.
Now, all I did was a flick right, because I have, at this point, I have it only set to show books and magazines which are on my device. Now, let me go back to it so you can hear what it said. I talked over it.
Macworld, 01/06/2013. Book downloaded. Double tap to open book.
Okay.
Menu off. Double tap for menu. Swipe two fingers down for continuous reading.
So now if...
Tap and hold to select text.
If I'm going to do my two fingers like that.
Illustration by Jude Balfour Mebenote has become my paperless filing cabinet for everything from receipts to tax documents. One of the most frequent ways I use it is as a place where I can file, and later find, if needed, the monthly statements for my phone, cable, and other periodically recurring accounts.
So as you can hear, it reads very smoothly. What I'm going to do now is I am going to double tap to bring up this fabulous menu.
Menu on. Return to book.
Now the first option it shows you is the return to book, which is actually located in the middle of the screen. So I'm just going to do a four-finger touch on the top of the screen, a four-finger tap.
Home. Button.
That would take you back to your home.
Table of contents. Button. View options. Button.
That's where you would set your font and the like.
Search. Button.
That's if you wanted to do a search, which I have actually not tested.
Image view. Button. One of two. Selected. Text view. Button.
And you can hear that text view is selected.
Return to book. Previous article. Button. Macworld Bulletin, May 31st, 2013. Filing bills paperlessly. Next article. Button.
Okay. So let me show you how cool this table of contents is.
Home. Button. Table of contents. Button. View options. Button. Search. Button. Macworld. In favor of a Mac Mini Tower, the presence of a big enough market and the requisite technology makes the Mini Tower doable. The paperless, voice-activated future, spring has sprung, and with it comes Siri suggestions, advice from an Apple Tech, three common Mac fixes. Between October 2012 and February 2013, I was a member of the University of California Berkeley's Tech Repair Windows staff.
And as you can hear, it's just giving you a little snippet of the article, and it's showing you all the articles in order. So let's say I want to read this one. If I just
double tap for menu.
I'm taken right there, and I can swipe down with two fingers.
Very nice.
Advice from an Apple Tech. Three common Mac fixes by Chris Derelick. You learn a lot from spending 4 months working at a tech shop window between October 2.
And it reads the article. Is that not the coolest thing you've seen in a while?
Yeah, it's very well done. And I'm impressed that the table of contents is working so well in the magazines, because I've heard some people say that they have not been able to get the table of contents to work, or I think it's more a matter that perhaps a lot of Kindle books don't have a true table of contents.
Yes, I think it's almost a similar notion as you see in different DAISY books. If it's marked up correctly, you can move by various sections and markers and such. But you're right, if a table of contents doesn't exist, then it's not going to be very, very accessible to anybody, blind or sighted.
Right. We see that across platforms, like you said, on DAISY, on Kindle, on even some iBooks are not marked up correctly.
And no.
Table of contents doesn't work. So this is a more, I think it's likely to be more of a publishing issue, ebook issue, than it is to be an actual accessibility issue.
I agree. And talking about iBooks just for a minute, I have noticed that the Kindle store has much better prices in general than iBooks. I know, going back to my conversations with Tom Petty book that I bought, it was $25 on the iBook store. So obviously I did some shopping around, and it was $13.99 on the Kindle store. So I think that the Kindle books are very competitively priced.
Do you think you had better conversations in the iBooks book?
I don't know. Maybe you did.
got the cheap ones in the Kindle book. No, of course I'm kidding. It's the same book.
And, of course.
And they do price them differently. And so that's one of the great things about having this Kindle access, is we now have access to iBooks, Amazon Kindle books, and to Barnes & Noble Nook books. And so if you want to look at the big three to see where you can get the best price on the book you're looking for, you can now do it. And all three of the apps are accessible. So it's really, as far as I'm concerned, a big step forward.
I agree. Now, some folks on Twitter were a little bit concerned about the fact that you do have to buy the books still, as with the Kindle keyboard. There is no way to purchase the books within the Kindle app, but there's very good reason for that. Apple, so as to cut down on competition and also so as to increase their revenue, have deemed that any sort of in-app purchases are subject to a 30% fee. So if Amazon was to sell Kindle books within the Kindle app, they would have to give Apple a 30% cut of whatever they charged for the book. And obviously they chose not to do this. But the process by which you purchase books is so simple. You can really do it from any browser. I elect to do it from Safari on the iPhone. And all we could do is go to www.amazon.com/mobile Kindle store on the iPhone. I know that there is another link specifically for the iPad store. It's referenced both in a Kindle accessibility shortcuts reference guide that you can get from the Kindle store, and also on an AppleVis post. You search for the book that you want on this site, you sign in, and you buy the book. I now have one click turned on, so when I find a book that I want to buy, I just hit buy now with one click. It says thank you very much. I exit Safari, I go into the Kindle app, and my book is there in the cloud tab.
Another way you can buy books is you can use the Amazon app. Not the Kindle app, but the Amazon shopping app that lets you shop for items on Amazon, and you can shop in the Kindle bookstore with that app the same way you shop in the Amazon store.
Oh, that's awesome. I had kind of heard mixed ideas about that. Someone had said, yes, you can do that. Another person had said, no, you can only browse, but you can't actually buy from within the Amazon mobile app. But if you can, that's wonderful, because I already have that installed.
Yeah, so I bought a book that way just the other day.
Oh, so great. Well, I can't wait to try that then, too, because I had made a little shortcut to the Kindle store on my home screen, but this would actually be a lot more convenient.
Yeah, either way will work. And I did notice, though, that when I signed in to the bookstore on the Amazon mobile app, it automatically turned on one-click shopping. In fact, you have to specifically tell it no if you don't want it to automatically turn it on. And okay, so for anyone who doesn't want the lovely temptation of the easy one click, make sure you turn it off. I also turned it on, or let it stay on, because it makes it so easy then. If you know, just make sure you really did want to buy the book before you double tap on buy or whatever the link is, purchase. I don't remember exactly what it says in that particular store, but it makes it clear that if you tap on this button, you will buy the book. And if you have one click on, you will immediately buy it with no further prompting.
Mm-hmm.
I saw several tweets, and I saw people on a couple of email lists that I'm on concerned that it was too difficult to buy the books. But I think really it's not difficult, as you're saying. It's just that people aren't used to doing it.
Right. It is an extra step, and I just think that folks aren't used to it. But literally, it takes maybe an extra minute of your time, and it's well worth it, I think.
Well, we should also, I think, mention that you can do the same thing on either a Windows PC or a Mac.
Yes.
You can go to the Amazon Kindle bookstore, buy books, and you simply, in a combo box or drop-down box, they sometimes call it, you can simply check that you want the book to be sent to your iPhone, and it will send it straight to the iPhone from purchasing it on the computer. So there are several ways to go about it.
Right. So there are so many options. It's great.
Yeah, they have made sure that it's pretty easy to buy the books.
They really
don't
have.
They don't want that to be a they don't want that to stand in your way.
Right. It's kind of an important part, isn't it, of the whole thing?
It is an important part. And in fact, the same thing is true for buying books through Barnes & Noble for the Nook app, and
right,
for
mm-hmm.
buying books through audible.com, the audiobooks. Mm-hmm. All that has to be done from within their mobile app stores or
right.
on a computer, for the same reason that you mentioned, because they don't want to pay Apple the 30%.
No, but, I can't really say that I blame them.
No, but none of them are hard to do,
and
I would not be discouraged or concerned. Just take a little time to go through buying one or two or 10 or, in my case, a few dozen, and you'll know how to do it then.
Yeah, I don't want to say how many books and magazines I bought.
No, I think that ought to be a woman's prerogative to keep that to herself, don't you?
I'm an American citizen, and the Fifth Amendment must apply in this case.
Exactly. What are some things, if there are any, that you found that you don't like so much about the app?
Well, the only feature, which is just a little bit puzzling to me, and to be honest with you, I don't even really know how much I would use it, but I could see it being really beneficial to a student in the classroom, is that there is a feature that if you are placed on a certain word, you can double tap and hold, and one of the options that pops up is the ability to look up that word in the dictionary. Now, I don't know if this is just my operator error or if it is a little bit of a bug. Some bugs with this double tap and hold gesture have been reported, but it also should be noted that this is a first attempt of implementing this idea. But it seems as though, like, if I'm on a phrase, the cat in the hat, and I go to look up cat, that I might actually be looking up the word the, even though I had set my rotor with the words option to be on the word cat, that I was actually looking up the word the.
Sounds like there's an issue that is not quite in sync between where the app thinks the cursor is and where VoiceOver is actually speaking.
Exactly, exactly. And like I said, for me, this really isn't an issue because I just kind of want to read my book and review it and maybe tweet about it later through the app. But for a student, I can see that this could really still kind of be a barrier. And I'm confident that Amazon has received feedback and will continue to do so and will fix it in a future update.
Well, to me, this is a pretty typical version 1 kind of bug.
Right.
I think the idea of implementing the feature in this way, the double tap and hold, and then being able to select, not only you can select one word, or you can even expand that selection and select multiple words if you want to copy them into a note or something like that. They've built in quite a bit of flexibility with what they're offering here, and a pretty advanced feature set, but they've got to just get it working a little better.
I agree, and I think they will. I think for version 1, I mean, this is so much better than a lot of version 1s I've seen of pretty much a lot of other apps.
Yeah. I will put a link in the show notes to an article that was written on the NFB blog on Friday, and clearly the people at the NFB Technology Center have really been doing their homework between Wednesday, when the app, we first saw it in the store, until this was published late Friday afternoon, because they've really done a lot of testing and even went to the point of going through the app and grading it as if you were in a class, giving it grades on various accessibility components. And while I'm not crazy about using the grading system as a way of evaluating this app, simply because grades are so subjective, and what I might think, you know, deserved an A, someone else might think it deserved a B, or vice versa. But even though I'm not thrilled with this particular choice of doing it this way, the review is very thorough, and they did a very nice job of covering all the major components of the app. I just encourage people to, when you read the review and you see that the overall rating for the app was in the C range, to use your own experience and decide whether or not it's a C app for you. I think it was primarily rated as low as a C because there are some issues, as you pointed out, with selecting text. There are some issues with the use of Braille. It does work with Braille, but apparently there are some bugs that they found. If you go to the top of the page with a Braille display, sometimes the app will crash and things like that. And so that got it a lower rating. But if you want to read, especially with speech, the app for, seems like, an awful lot of books and magazines is very well done and very useful the way that it is right now.
Extremely so. I have to admit that although I have a Braille display, I have not really tested it. I don't really read a lot of books in Braille. I do tend to read books when I'm doing things around the house, and a lot of times when I'm falling asleep at night. So I do tend to read more with speech nowadays, just because it's very convenient. So I do want to eventually test this with my Focus 14, but I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I need to do some of that testing as well. It's less than a week old for all of us, so there's still more to explore and more to learn about.
Oh, yeah.
I was a bit disappointed, honestly, in the harshness of the NFB press release about the app, sort of commenting, yes, it's great they've done this, but there are 10 more things they need to do, and it needs to be done right now. And I sort of felt like, gosh, you know, let's take a day or two and celebrate the progress and offer some constructive feedback and give Amazon time to seize the momentum and move forward with this. And
exactly. I was really shocked by the tone. I really felt like they were basically saying, okay, we have this, but now we want this, 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 and this. They weren't saying, thank you for the progress you've made so far, and we'll look forward to other progress in the future or further progress in the future. They were saying, yeah, this is great, but this stuff still sucks, and this is what you need to fix. So I really felt like it was very harsh, and I was quite frankly really very shocked, and I did, which I'm not apt to doing very often. I did kind of react to it pretty vocally on Twitter because I just really felt that the harshness was way out of line.
Well, I think you captured it so well in your excitement at the beginning. To me, it's something to celebrate, not something to criticize.
Exactly. Something that we have waited for so many years is finally accessible to us. And I think that at this point, at this very early kind of infancy stage in the implementation of accessibility, we need to encourage Amazon. We don't need to isolate ourselves again from them by being obnoxious and harsh.
Right, because they've really shown that they have embraced this willingness to do more than just a bolt-on sort of accessible. We can't know right now what they will or won't do in the future, but I certainly am going to be one who is going to enjoy this app and going to celebrate this step, because I just see it as, for me personally, and I think for blind people in general, as a huge step forward to have access to this over 1 million book library. We've never seen anything like this before, and I know that people would like to see it come to Android, like to see it available on the computer the way that it is, and right now it's really only fully implemented, or maybe only implemented at all, on iOS. But this is a big step forward because iOS is very popular. There are an awful lot of people out there with iOS devices that can take advantage of this app right now.
Yes, and Amazon has said that they're going to bring this to other platforms as well. So just hang on to your hats, folks. It's coming.
Yeah, and I don't know whether we mentioned, perhaps we did, but just in case we didn't, this is a free app.
It is absolutely free. And I continue to be absolutely flabbergasted in a wonderful way by the number of books which are available for free or practically for free on Kindle. So it is possible with some searching to download the app absolutely free and to find a free book to determine, okay, is this a platform that I want to really delve into? And at any rate, even if the book you want isn't free, you could almost always download a free sample. So you're really not having to invest anything except a little bit of your time in order to determine if this is an appropriate platform for you.
Well, it may be not something that people have thought a lot about, because we're accustomed to having books available for free from the National Library Service and almost free from Bookshare. Yeah, there's a $50 a year fee, but if you download a lot of books, that's a drop in the bucket.
Right.
But the rest of the world who isn't blind is accustomed to paying for their books. And I think it's a welcome change for us to be able to pay the same price for equal access to the same book. And I think that's an area that we as blind people have to embrace and move forward and be willing to put a few dollars into these books, because it's very true that these books can't be produced and written and put on line for free. People need to be reimbursed for their work, and we need to participate in that, I think.
I agree. As a population and community in general, we really need to shift our thinking a little bit in those terms.
It's great to have the other services, and some of the things that are available on the Kindle bookstore, some of the magazines and so forth, are available other places in NFB Newsline or in NLS. But it's interesting, someone commented on Twitter or on an email list, I believe, actually, that I subscribe to, that they took a look at the magazine that you were just demonstrating, Macworld, in the Kindle store, and they compared it to supposedly the same version of Macworld that's on NFB Newsline, and they were quite different. And so I'm not sure how to explain that or exactly why that's the case. I've noticed the same thing with the New York Times. For whatever reason, whatever NFB Newsline is able to access and put out is rather different from what the New York Times puts out in its subscription-based app, and apparently rather different from what gets put out in Macworld. Not to say that there aren't overlap and some of the articles are the same, but it's not a page-for-page, article-for-article replication, and I don't know why that is, but it is sort of surprising in a way.
That is very surprising, and to be honest with you, I have not been able to do a side-by-side comparison, although I do have the NFB Newsline app. Did they find that there was more content in the Kindle version?
Well, I don't know about the Kindle version of Macworld, at least I don't know to that level of detail, but I know there's more content in the New York Times version that's the subscription versus the NFB Newsline version. And I love NFB Newsline. I'm not putting it down because I honestly don't know why there are these differences. But one of the huge differences with the New York Times subscription, which is pretty expensive, it's like $15 a month. So it's a pretty expensive subscription. Mm-hmm. But you get things like links in the articles to videos. So if you read an article about something that took place, maybe the president making a speech, there will very often be a link there with a video where you can just tap on it and go and watch and listen to the president's speech right there within the app.
You also within the Kindle app, you can access these links?
No, this is the New York Times app I'm talking about.
Oh, excuse me, sorry.
Yeah, this is the New York Times app. But I'm just pointing out that you cannot do that from within the NFB Newsline app. That those features aren't offered.
That is interesting.
And at least as far as I know, now I must admit I haven't looked at the New York Times in the NFB Newsline app in a while because I switched over to the subscription. But the other advantage that the subscription is you get push notifications if something important is going on. In the news, you get a push notification if you're a New York Times subscriber. But again, you know, you have to pay for it. I mean, you pay for the app. And so you have to decide whether that's worth it to you or not. I'm a big news junkie and like to keep up with what's going on. So it's worth it to me.
Yeah.
May not be worth it to everybody. But I don't think we, you know, can answer the question why there are some differences. But I think what it does point out to us is that there's a whole new world of options and publications opening up to us, and we're just in its infancy, really. I mean, this app coming along is just a few days old now with this level of accessibility, but it's not just the Kindle app. We've seen in recent months many other publishers make their apps or their publications accessible, the New York Times being one of them. They made a huge step forward with accessibility recently, and we're seeing other publishers do this. And so it's a very exciting time for anybody who loves books and magazines and current events and who has a mobile device, especially an iOS device right now. There is a ton of stuff out there.
I agree. This is only the beginning. It's like I tell a lot of my clients and friends, it's a very exciting time to be blind. It really is.
Yeah, having more than you can ever get around to reading is a great problem to have.
It's a wonderful problem to have.
Yeah, I'll be happy to stress over that one for quite a while.
Yeah, me too. One of the final things that I kind of wanted to touch on today was just the sheer amount of mainstream coverage that this implementation of accessibility in the Kindle iOS app has been getting. I've seen articles from CNET, from 9to5Mac, from Lifehacker, and I wanted to talk just a tad about the Lifehacker article because it's an example of how by talking about these accessibility issues in the mainstream, sometimes a little bit of misinformation can sometimes be disseminated. The author in the Lifehacker article did state that at one point that we had to use Siri's voice. That's what it kept saying. Siri's voice. It did eventually say that you have to implement VoiceOver to get Siri's voice to read you the Kindle content. But then it really misinformed its readership by saying that we could only read the Kindle books one line at a time. And I'm happy to report that in the comments, someone did set them straight on this issue. I think that the author was looking at it in terms of, oh, okay, a sighted person could use this while driving, and oh yeah, it could be good for blind people too. But the author at one point did even say in the comments, oh, but it's kind of annoying to have to triple click home and ring up VoiceOver. So I found that a little bit interesting.
Well, I think that I would rather almost have the coverage and have there be some mistakes made or misconceptions expressed than not have the coverage.
Me too, ultimately.
Because I think the more we can teach the real world, the sighted world, about how we go about using our iOS devices to access these books, the more on some level it helps us to be integrated into the mainstream.
I agree. I think that all this mainstream coverage, even the little bit of misinformation, which was luckily corrected, is really amazing, because if we can educate one or two or three people at a time, we can really create a shift towards inclusion, towards greater accessibility.
Yeah, the beauty of the internet is you educate thousands of people.
Thousands at a time, yes. It's great. But I mean, if we can reach out and educate at least one or two or three people, I should say, who may be able to make a difference in terms of development in the future. If we can educate an app developer, as we've been doing through various, you know, campaigns on AppleVis and also through just contacting developers individually, but if we could educate people through these mainstream articles, then again, it's just gonna signify ultimately a paradigm shift, hopefully towards greater accessibility overall of many different apps.
Yeah, and then people are going to start wondering, well, gosh, you know, if they can read these books this way, wonder if they could do this job, or wonder if they could apply for this educational program, or why don't we investigate a little more about how they might go about using their computer to do this thing we're trying to do in our community here. So I think the ripple effect can be pretty great from this if we'll just hang in there, stay positive, keep answering questions, and be open to this connection process. I really think it can happen.
Exactly.
So I think that you can talk about the app itself, and certainly that in and of itself is exciting and something that we can all celebrate. But when you really stop and think about it, there are much broader implications, especially when you can connect with people on something as widespread as Kindle. You know, everyone's heard of the Kindle and knows someone. If they don't read Kindle books themselves, they know someone who does. Virtually everyone does. And so it's a real chance for some progress to be made. And anything that we can do as a community to facilitate it moving forward, I'm all for it. And I think that's one of the reasons that I wanted to make sure we spent some time talking about this on the podcast today, is because it's a great time. Let's seize the day here and all start thinking about how to move this forward. I saw a lot of mainstream coverage too. Even the a site that I follow, the unofficial Apple weblog, which is a blog and podcasting site, covered the Kindle accessibility. So it's great to see, you know, this crossing people's RSS feeds, and that a lot of people read that stuff. So it's exciting.
Definitely. Definitely. I just couldn't be more thrilled.
All right. Well, I think we have covered this to the extent that we can at this point. It's so brand new. I'm suspecting we'll be adding to this in the future as we all learn more about it. And as Amazon releases new versions, there'll be more features added, I'm sure, more to talk about, more to test, and who knows, we might even find some expert out there to come on and talk to us about this situation at Amazon at some point.
That'd be cool.
All right, well, if you all have comments or questions, I often forget to remind you that you can email us at techdoctor@dr-carter.com. techdoctor@drcarter.com, and we'll be happy to read your email and respond to questions or start a dialogue with you if you want to talk about some of these things that we've discussed. So thanks for listening, you all. Glad you were with us again today, and hope you'll come back often. Until next time, so long.
Bye, everyone.